Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Greetings to all of you listening around the world, and a warm welcome as we bring you another edition of the Answers for the Family radio show. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and if you're a regular listener, thank you so much for joining us once again. Now, if this is your first time, please make yourself at home as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, each week, this show will address a variety of issues, such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, lasting health, and so much more. Now, having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and skilled authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, you can all do me a big favor. Now, check out some of our past issues or our past shows on answersforthefamily.com. And when you hear some of them that you like, share them with somebody you know, share them with somebody you love. You will find that there are informative and entertaining guests as well as dynamic co-hosts that you can then go ahead and then follow them because they're all discussing ways for you and your loved ones to become happier, healthier, and more at peace. Now, I'm looking for a few show ambassadors who will forward at least one of our shows to your social media group or to someone you know that can benefit from a particular show. I want you to know we truly appreciate it, and this is just another way that we can make a positive difference in the lives of others. Now, speaking of making a positive difference in the lives of others, we have with us as a guest co-host today, which is teen advocate and motivational speaker as well as actor, Jesse LeBeau. And Jesse, as well as Jennifer Polich, created the Attitude is Everything Foundation. Jesse?
We did it.
Yes,
I'm here.
You did.
I'm excited.
All right.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you're here, but we have someone else with us as well. And that is Gabriella Von Ray, our ambassador to kindness. And so our question that now many of our listeners are asking, where in the world is Gabriella?
Where are you? We want to know. Come on, give it to us.
All right. I just passed Columbus, Ohio in the car, and no, I am not driving. My manager is driving. I dragged her and said, you have to come with me because there's a big snowstorm coming, and I'm not very good driver in the snow.
Well, I'm glad that you're doing that. So is that Bobby that's with you?
Yes, Bobby is with me.
Bobby, thank you for handling that part of it so that Gabriella can be with us on the air. So, Gabriella, for those people that haven't heard what it is you're up to, share a little bit about your two-year journey that you are partaking in to bring kindness to the world.
So the Dare to Be Kind movement was basically founded out of necessity, because we really do need a little bit more kindness. But I was basically doing school assemblies and talking about teen suicides and values and our standards and bullying and cyber torment, and said, I'm going to do a little bit more than just that. And by creating the Dare to Be Kind, both students and adults just kind of jumped on board. And we got to do more and more. And I said, it is better to do a world tour with this than just each time a short campaign, which then basically gets me home totally exhausted. And then I go back on the road. So I thought, well, you might as well just be on the road and stay on the road for 2 years. So we started in LA on November 1st, 2018, and we have done so many cities already. And the fun part is we keep backtracking because someone hears about us and wants us to come and speak. So we do schools, universities, corporates, and it's corporate America that is paying, but the schools and universities are not always in the ability to pay, and then we will still come to you. And in Pittsburgh, that's my stop tomorrow. That's where we have universities and schools all set up, and then we're off to New York.
Well, Gabriella, the first word that comes to mind right now is synergy. And I know that you and I already have that, but one of the reasons why I thought it'd be great to have Jesse on is with the two of you out there going to schools, working with kids, I'm just excited over the fact I'm getting a herpulation. And for those that don't know what that is, look it up. It's something called a dictionary. To have you guys out there working in the schools and making a positive difference is just phenomenal.
Yeah, I love Absolutely. It. I love it. So where have you been so far in this journey?
Oh my gosh.
2 years sounds like a lot. You're going big. I love it.
Okay, so I've been at this since 2012, so I know every single state in the U.S., that's for sure. I've done many of the Canadian provinces, and I've done places in both the Netherlands, Belgium, and France, and both Costa Rica and Mexico. That's about the extent that I've done. And so I went beyond that, and I said, I want to go everywhere all the time. And so it's actually easier to just kind of stay on the road than to come off each time and try to water your plants at home. So I gave up my LA home, and my stuff is basically in a storage. And the benefits are not just the students. It's basically everyone. We want to have one person that understands what kindness is, and we're teaching what to do in your own 2 mile radius in kindness, you know, because people sometimes need a little push or a little idea, and people often think that kindness is just kind of it's not sugar and spice and everything nice. No, it's hard and it's tough, and we understand that. And so our slogan basically is Dare to Be Kind, a global movement. We want the world to care. We are creating, our vision is creating safer communities. The method is kindness, and the vehicle is you, because without you, there is no movement.
Beautiful. I love it. I think the world needs more kindness, and I also think it needs more toughness. And if you can combine the two, I just think it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And I also love that you sprinkled some tropical locations in there, which I'm thinking this time of year, you might have to rearrange that tour. We're going to have to talk to your manager there and get you to some of those tropical places right now and come back to Pittsburgh, you know, closer to the summertime.
I know. And I'd love to meet you. I am in LA at the end of April.
Wonderful. Let's do it. Yes. We'll make it happen.
Yes, so let's definitely make that happen.
We'd love to make that happen.
Now, for everybody out there, if you would like to get involved, and you know, I know, Gabriella, you can tell them a little more about it, but I know if you go to the Indiegogo page and just...
Not anymore.
What I thought. I was going to say, I knew that was going to end.
It ended last night.
Oh, yes.
Unfortunately.
That's right. Okay, so...
But still, you can go to our Dare to Be Kind, or write the manager. If you go to the website, she's everywhere. Her name is Bobby Folsom. And you can donate. And there's so many things. You don't have to only donate money.
Right.
We would be so happy that you called her and that you invite us to your school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
You know, that is big. And if you want to become a kindness instigator, we would be happy to have you. Just consider it.
Let's do it. I'm ready to start instigating. Let's
All
go.
Right.
Let's
yes.
go.
Okay. At All the right. end of the show, I'm going to call you back.
Let's do it.
That's great. So, okay. Gabriella, thank you for so much for everything that you're doing out there. And for everybody, she will be back with us again next week on Answers for the Family.
Thank you. And Gary, have a great show. Gary, Jess,
thank you.
And Alan, goodbye.
All right.
Drive safe.
Yes, definitely.
Yes, will do. Bye.
All right. So Jesse, before we bring on our guest,
yes.
tell us a little bit about, I mean, you know, obviously, you know, you're working as an actor and things like that. Well, what motivated you to then form this foundation and focus on becoming an advocate and speaker for teens?
Yeah, my whole life, I was crazy about basketball. That was my thing ever since I was little, growing up on a little island in Alaska. And I ended up in LA after college. And I was doing basketball commercials, and I got the opportunity to travel all over the world with some amazing people. And one of the most amazing of those people was my hero, Allen Iverson.
Nice.
So I was traveling around the country, and kids would come up to us after these games, and they just wanted your attention. They wanted some time. They wanted you to take an interest in their life. And I realized they didn't have role models like I was blessed to have, a good mother and father who encouraged me, who believed in me. And I saw they were excited because I could do tricks with a basketball, but there was something more that I could do there. And it didn't matter if we even spoke the same language in some of these countries. Mm-hmm. And it was a real light bulb moment for me. And that's when I decided I want to do more than just entertain on a basketball court. I want to have an impact. And I said, I'm going to write a book and I'm going to start speaking. And I just kind of learned how to make it all happen on the fly. And it has turned into this this big movement that's been really exciting and turned into TV shows and curriculums and national tours and all these amazing things that's so much bigger than the original idea. When you really find your purpose and your why, you know, you learn how to work through anything. Any obstacle comes up, you got to figure it out because there's something, there's a need out there that you believe in that's bigger than yourself.
Well, now the name of the book is called Among the Giants. How did you come up with that title?
You know, it's, I think it might have just came to me late night in the shower, but my whole life has always been, you know, I'm around these big basketball guys that are, you know, close to 7 feet tall. And then there's little me, 5'7", you know, little scrawny, pale white guy. So we had a picture that I had done a shoot with me and 2 7-footers and was like, that's the perfect shot. It's me and these giants and among the giants. And the whole theme is being an underdog. And the crazy thing is almost anyone could connect with being an underdog. And that's something that's really special in how I've been able to use my story to connect with people from all walks of life, old, young, been through crazy things. Everyone really can identify with that, it seems.
Well, and for those people that can identify it, what is the best way for them to get in touch with you or get in touch with the foundation if they want to get involved?
Yeah, the foundation is called the Attitude is Everything Foundation. Pretty easy to find online, just attitudeiseverythingfoundation.org. And then I'm easy to find too. It's just my name, Jesse LeBeau, J-E-S-S-E-L-E-B as in boy, E-A-U on social media and online. So pretty easy to find us.
All right. And for those out there that if you're driving, obviously you're not able to write that down, you can always go to the Answers for the Family site and we will have all this information about Jesse as well as about Gabriella and about Gary, our guest that we're about to bring on. You can get all that information right on our site as well.
Beautiful.
All right. So
excited to meet Gary.
All right. So yes. So our topic today, which is also the title of our guest's new book, is The Ultimate Pet Health Guide, Secrets to Helping Pets Live Much Longer and Healthier Lives. Now, to talk about his new book and more, Dr. Gary Richter is a graduate of the University of Florida with a BS in Animal Science, a Master's in Veterinary Medicine Science, and a Doctorate in Veterinary Medicine with Honors. Now, since 2002, he's been the owner and Medical Director of Montclair Veterinarian Hospital in Oakland, California, and he launched the Holistic Veterinarian Care in 2009. Dr. Richter is certified in veterinary acupuncture as well as a veterinarian chiropractic and uses these therapies along with his veterinarian medical education to achieve better outcomes for his patients. Now, Dr. Richter and his two animal hospitals have received more than 30 local and national awards, including Best Veterinarian Hospital, Best Veterinarian, Best Canine Therapy Facility, and so on. In his Montclair Veterinary Hospital, was named one of the top 10 veterinary hospitals in 2013, while Dr. Richter himself was named one of the top veterinarians in the United States. So, you know, there's so much information out there. Being someone who has two dogs myself, I make sure that they have very good care and so on. And I think that's also something that's really positive in the sense that, you know, I've gone out to social living homes for seniors and stuff. I went out to the one many times that my grandmother was at. And one of the things that I thought was incredible was the way in which they've incorporated animals to be with some of these people so that they're not lonely. And I saw the love there. And being, again, somebody who's had animals all his life, I saw this as a great opportunity. So for anybody out there, you know, if you want more information in regards to Gary's work as well as his pet health resources, you can always go visit petvetexpert.com. So Gary, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you so much. I'm thrilled to be here.
So one of the things, and again, as I was going through the book, and I was really enjoying the fact that a lot of what you're doing is a lot of the same things that we seem like we're going through as a society, where we're starting to recognize that there are more things that we can do to take care of our own health, that seems like it's very similar to what we can be doing with our animals as well. So, you know, let me ask you, what are some of the most important things that we as pet owners can do to keep our pets as healthy as possible?
Well, that's a really great question, and you know, to me, you know, the best things that you can do for your pets are all on the preventative side of things. So, you know, what can we do to prevent illness? What can we do to prevent injury? You know, because, you know, from a medical perspective, it's always easier to prevent things than it is to have to treat them after the fact. So, you know, one of the things that I very, very commonly speak with people about, because I think it's something that is so frequently missed, not only in veterinary medicine, but in human medicine as well, is nutrition. You know, I mean, you know, sort of the old adage of you are what you eat. It is a very true statement. You know, certainly when it comes to dogs and cats, the better they're eating, the more healthy diet that they're eating, you know, the more healthy that they are going to stay over a lifetime. Now, part of the problem that we run into is that so much of the food that's out there that's being sold for dogs and cats is really not optimal nutrition for them. So, you know, keeping our pets on highly processed foods like canned food or kibble, it may be convenient for us, but it's certainly not what is ideal nutrition for them, any more than you know, eating a bunch of processed food as a human is going to be good for me. So, you know, certainly step one with keeping your pet healthy is getting them converted over to a fresh whole food diet, you know, whether or not that particular diet is cooked food, it's raw food, it's, you know, some sort of freeze-dried preparation, that you know, necessity is going to be a little bit variable from one animal's needs to the next. But the overarching goal is to get them on fresh whole foods and away from processed foods of any kind.
Now, for me, that sounds like we've sort of kind of gone sort of a full circle thing, because I remember as a kid, you know, the dogs got the scraps from our table, but yet our meals were made from scratch. I mean, so there was usually a, you know, there was a starch like a rice, there was a meat like a fish or a beef, and there were fresh vegetables. And the scraps would go to the dogs. And then I recall maybe 20 years ago or so being told, you can't do that.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
it's terrible. You can't be giving scraps to your dogs. You have to give them these balanced bags of food. And, you know, and now what you're telling us is we may have actually been doing it better before than we actually are now. So, I mean, share with us a little bit about, because I know there's such a wide variety while we're talking about the food. I know that I do a grain-free and I add in either, you know, meat, fish, or vegetables. And I'm fortunate. I've got a 100-pound black shepherd that her favorite thing is carrots, raw carrots. You know, so I think she's part horse or something. But so what are some of the things that we can do? And for those people that are going to the store and buying it, and rather than buying whatever the bargain brand is, are there ones that are a kibble that, because they're grain-free or because they're made a different way, that might be a little better for them?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. And you know, I mean, to your point earlier, you know, the pet food industry has done some good things from the standpoint of, you know, making sure that animals are eating a properly balanced diet is always a plus. You know, that said, the, you know, sort of the minimum standards that are held to meet that claim of complete and balanced it's a pretty low bar, to be honest with you. You know, that those standards are developed to make sure that animals don't wind up with a vitamin deficiency or something to that effect, but it's not necessarily about what is optimal for their health. And certainly when it comes to processed foods like dry food and canned food, you know, realize that those diets only exist for one reason, and that one reason is our convenience. It was never about what was ideal for dogs or cats, because just like with everybody else, what's ideal for dogs and cats is going to be a fresh whole food diet that looks very similar to what those animals evolved eating. And you know, none of these animals evolved eating, you know, food that's been cooked at incredibly high temperatures and extruded at very high pressures, because a lot of chemical changes happen in foods when that happens, that can really, really affect the nutrition in a very negative way. My very strong suggestion to people, as I said before, is to get pets on one of these fresh whole food diets, many of them which can be purchased in pet stores or online these days. So it's not a difficult thing to do. In addition, for people who are so interested, you absolutely can make food for your dog at home or your cat. But the key to that is if that's something that you're going to be doing for the long term, it's important that you work off of a recipe to make sure that they get all of the nutrients that they need over time. The big difference between animals and people is, you know, as a person, while it's certainly true that not every meal that I eat is perfectly nutritionally balanced, you know, the goal is that because I eat a wide variety of foods over the long haul, I'm covering all my bases. Now, when it comes to dogs and cats, they have a tendency to eat very much the same thing every single day. So if there are things missing in their diet, those problems are going to become significantly magnified over time.
Amazing. Gary, Jesse here. So it just seems to me like it is the best time in the history of the world to be a dog. The information there is there, the knowledge is there. I mean, around me here in LA, I see these people pushing their dogs in strollers, and I'm pretty sure they have a better life and have a better diet than I did when I was a kid. And I just want to know, should we hate these people, or are they doing it right and who we need to be following and being kind to right now? I'm confused to see this. I don't know. I have very mixed feelings.
Sure. So certainly there is no medical reason why a dog needs to be pushed in a stroller. So that's not so much a healthcare issue. But you know, it's interesting, just as a society, you know, you can see how we're starting to turn the corner a little bit. I mean, you know, way back in the, you know, sort of post-World War II 1950s era, we kind of started moving down this road of you know, from a medical standpoint, a healthcare system that was, you know, sort of take these pills and call me in the morning, and, you know, from a nutritional plan of, you know, let's make a bunch of processed food that you know, that's kind of ready to eat and serve, that people can just eat, and you know, the similar things have happened with animals. And what we've seen over time is that approach to medicine and nutrition really will come back to haunt you later. So, you know, both as people and as pet owners, we're really starting to realize how important it is to feed real food, how important it is to take an active role in preventative healthcare, you know, and not wait till there's a problem and then try and put out the fire after the fact. So, you know, for all those people down in LA that you're seeing, you know, I would say on some level, yes, I think they do have it right. You know, although sort of, you know, dressing your dog in a cashmere sweater and, you know, and carrying them around in a stroller may be a little bit of a bridge too far for some of us.
Yeah, it is fun to watch. It is fun to watch, though. So tell me about vaccines. I know it's controversial with humans to a lot of people, but what about with pets?
Sure, that's a really good question. And you know, I mean, vaccines, they're very much a double-edged sword, if you will, in so much as vaccines have enormous value. You know, when it comes to dogs and cats, you know, I mean, there are certainly diseases out there that if dogs or cats are exposed to them, they can be very serious and in many cases very deadly. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, vaccines are by no means benign substances. And I think the veterinary industry on the whole has certainly been guilty in the past of over-vaccinating animals. And, you know, we could talk for days about the, you know, the particular reasons for that. But the bottom line is what we know now is that many of the vaccines that dogs are given as puppies will confer immunity to them for years, if not potentially for their entire lifetime. Now, that's not necessarily true for every single vaccine, but for example, when you vaccinate a puppy for distemper and parvo, which are two diseases that will kill them if they get it, but once they're properly vaccinated as a puppy, many of these dogs have protection for life. Now, you can run blood tests to confirm that. I certainly wouldn't suggest that somebody just take it on faith that their pet is protected, but you can run a blood test, make sure they have appropriate antibody levels, and then again, avoid giving an unnecessary medication in the form of a vaccination. That's the biggest thing about vaccines. And the other thing about them is, you know, vaccines are certainly not a one size fits all when it comes to animals. What any given individual should be vaccinated for is going to have an enormous amount to do with their lifestyle, their health status, their age, their travel history. There's a huge list that your veterinarian needs to consider when deciding what is best for your individual pet. So the one thing that I would definitively suggest people not do is go to some place that is just going to do sort of a blanket cookie cutter vaccine protocol for every animal that comes in, because what that's probably going to mean is that your pet is going to be over vaccinated, potentially to their detriment.
So, Gary, I know that, I mean, we're finding out now, especially, you know, with humans, that there are some natural substitutes that we can be doing in place of opioids and things like that. Are there natural substitutes for animals for vaccines?
There really are. You know, when it comes to vaccinations, there really is not. There's really not a good natural substitute for that kind of stuff. I mean, you know, when you're giving a vaccine, essentially you are exposing a person or an animal to either an attenuated form of the disease or sort of a fragment of the virus or bacteria in question to stimulate immunity. There's really no other way to do that, from a natural standpoint. And you know, there are people out there who will promote homeopathic remedies as a substitute for vaccination. And I could not strongly enough recommend against putting faith in those sorts of products if you're trying to protect your pet against a disease that could be deadly.
Good to know. So, and going along those lines about natural things, I mean, right now CBD is now being proven to benefit humans. Can pets benefit as well from CBD or medical cannabis?
That's a really outstanding question, and the very short answer to your question is absolutely yes. Pretty much every benefit that you've ever seen or read about as it pertains to medical cannabis for humans also pertains to animals. So, you know, the potential indications ranging anywhere from treatment of pain, gastrointestinal issues, anxiety, seizures, as an adjunctive treatment for cancer. The list really, really just goes on and on. Part of the problem that the veterinary community and I think by association the pet owning community is having right now is the legal landscape as it pertains to these products is very, very murky. Mm-hmm. In California, last year, we managed to get a piece of legislation passed that for the first time would allow veterinarians to, quote, discuss the use of cannabis with pet owners. And I was literally sitting in front of the veterinary medical board just last week because now they're sitting down to try and determine exactly how to define the word discuss. And I will tell you that there are elements within the board who are trying to make that definition so narrow as to make it functionally impossible for me as a veterinarian to provide you with any kind of guidance on how to use cannabis in your pet safely and effectively. So it is a very rocky landscape right now, and you know, there's a lot of people that are working very hard to get this smoothed out and to provide some clarity for pet owners and for veterinarians. But it is very much a work in progress.
Well, we might have to put in a call to Mike Tyson because I hear he's pretty pretty doing it pretty big in the medical cannabis world right now. So this might be something we
need to
keep in
mind. Well, maybe he can come to the next veterinary medical board meeting. That should be fun.
I would love to see that.
Yo, so. Yeah, me too. I'd like to see him say, I think if you really don't listen to me properly, I may have to come over there and punch your lights out.
Yeah. I think it would go over real well. Yeah. It would be a real big hit. So Gary, I'm assuming that all veterinarians aren't created equal. So how does one go to find a good veterinarian? We need tips and tricks.
That's an interesting thought, and I would agree with you. Just like every profession, people within that profession are going to have different styles of practice. They are going to have different areas of focus, and to a certain extent, maybe different areas of motivation as far as, you know, what gets that person out of bed in the morning. When it comes to finding a veterinarian, one of the first things that I often tell people, and I wrote about this in my book, is that it's really important that you as a pet owner have a relationship with a veterinarian that has a practice style and a practice outlook that you agree with. And I full well know that, you know, for me as an integrative veterinarian that does both natural and Western medicine, that's not what everybody wants. Some people don't want to talk about that. They just want, you know, sort of the bare bones, conventional Western medicine, and that's fine. That particular person may be happier with a veterinarian that focuses a little bit more in that area. So what I would suggest for people when you're looking for a veterinarian is, number one, ask around to people that you know. It may take actually making some appointments with a couple of different veterinarians and effectively kind of doing an interview, if you will, to see if their sort of practice style agrees with what you want. And if you happen to be looking for a holistic or an integrative veterinarian, my suggestion would be if you go to the American Holistic Veterinary Medical Association website, which is ahvma.org. You can search for a veterinarian in your area, and that'll give you some resources as far as some people with that sort of outlook.
Thank you. That's really good advice. Now, we're going to take a break. For those people, if you want to follow along, you can also go to one of Gary's websites, which is Dr. Gary Richter. It's richter.com or petvetexpert.com. You can follow along with us. We're going to take a break. It'll only be about a minute, and we will be right back. You're listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family. We have with us Dr. Gary Richter, and we have Jesse LeBeau. Our topic for the most part is the Ultimate Pet Health Guide, Secrets to Helping Pets Live Much Longer and Healthier Lives. But as you can tell, if you've been listening, we're talking about a lot more than just that. So I think one of the things that we were touching on, had to do with, we were talking about how do you get the best veterinarian and stuff, but I don't know that we went into supplements that much. So in this day and age where I think most of us as humans are taking supplements for just about everything, what are some of the best supplements that we can give our dogs or cats, or is that something that we should be doing?
That is a question that is a little bit variable depending on sort of, you know, the age and health status of a pet. But as a rule, you know, pretty much everybody can benefit from some sort of supplementation. Now, certainly the pets that are eating optimal diets, like these fresh whole food diets that we were speaking of, are going to have a tendency to need less of a supplementation than perhaps one that's eating a lower quality diet. But you know what? There are some supplements out there that are really just kind of across the board beneficial. So things like probiotics, a supplement like fish oil can be very, very beneficial for animals. And there are, you know, there's a lot of supplements that I use in my practice that I find are just super supportive of overall health and can be helpful for immune system health and to minimize inflammation. So, you know, I very frequently use herbs and supplements in my practice, like various types of medicinal mushrooms, boswellia, curcumin, antioxidants, these sorts of things. And you know, because I've been doing that for quite some time, last year, I went ahead and I actually just sort of put together a combination supplement that, you know, that is now available on the market for people to use as kind of a general healthcare supplement. The supplement's called NutraThrive, and it is available online at ultimatepetnutrition.com.
So, Gary, let me ask you something in regards to what certain things mean, because obviously our dogs can't tell us specifically,
sure.
Although sometimes they're pretty close. So for instance, so you have something like, okay, our dog starts eating grass, that may equate to needing more probiotics for their diet so that they're digesting better. Or, you know, my 15-year-old Blue Heeler Terrier, his rear legs are starting to look a little stiff, so something like a Glycoflex or something with glucosamine chondroitin in it. So, but what is the thing that we see in our dog, and what does that equate to what we might want to do to help them?
Right, and you know, I mean, you brought up two interesting examples that I think are really good examples of how, you know, a noticed behavior can mean a number of different things. So, for example, your dog is eating grass. I mean, could that be indicative of some sort of nutritional issue or the need for probiotics? Sure. It could also be indicative of the pet having some sort of gastrointestinal upset. Sometimes animals will eat grass if they have GI upset. And I will tell you, at least up here in Northern California, in the springtime when all the grass is just sprouting like crazy, dogs tend to find that stuff irresistible in the springtime, and they will go out there and eat it, honestly, I think, because it tastes good. Mm-hmm. You know, it is really sort of very variable. Similarly, you know, your dog's hind legs are getting stiff. It could be arthritis. It could be a back problem. It could be that they've injured their knee. You know, these are all really good reasons to have a conversation with your veterinarian about what would be the best course of action. And you know, what I very commonly will tell people is that dogs and cats are very much creatures of habit and pattern. They have a tendency to sort of go through the same routine every day. So I frequently tell people that if you see any kind of significant change in that pattern, then that may be cause, you know, to pay a little bit closer attention. So, you know, if their eating habits are a little bit different, if they're drinking more water than they used to, they're sleeping somewhere new, they want to go outside at different times of the day, all of these things can be very subtle early indications of medical issues. You know, as you said before, you know, your dog or your cat is not going to tell you what's wrong with them. And while I've often said that dogs and cats are 100% honest, there is actually one exception to that rule, and that exception is that when it comes to their own health care, they will lie through their teeth to you. And the reason for that is that, you know, an animal in the wild that looks sick or injured has a target on it. You know, predators will seek out those animals and hunt them. So, you know, despite, you know, many tens of thousands of years of domestication, our dogs and cats kind of retain that hard wiring to try and make it look like everything's fine, even when it's not. So frequently, by the time there are signs of something's different, something doesn't look right, a lot of times that means something's been going on for a while, which makes it all the more important that anytime you see something that even seems kind of subtle, it's worth checking in with your veterinarian, because again, you know, problems are always easier to prevent than they are to treat, and they're also easier to treat if you treat them early rather than if by the time that you get started, the house is on fire.
Sounds more and more like people.
Yeah.
I'm always trying to hide all my problems too. So I'm convinced we're all the same right now. So Gary, I got to get right to it. I got a question for you. Should I consider spraying or neutering my dog? I don't know what I'm doing. I'm out here. I was about to buy a stroller. So I need your help, obviously.
You know, spaying and neutering dogs is a topic of much controversy and debate these days. You know, it's for years and years and years, kind of the standard veterinary approach has been you spay or neuter your pet before they're 6 months old. And the rationale for doing this was, you know, the surgery's easier when they're younger. And if you spay or neuter them before they go into their first heat, then nobody has to deal with the behavioral issues that come with, you know, with a dog going through puberty or a cat going through puberty. That said, there have been some studies that have come out over the past several years that shed a little bit of doubt on that 6 month plan. And really what has come out is that certain breeds of dogs appear to be healthier if they are spayed or neutered later or not at all. And when I say healthier, what I really mean is they're better from an orthopedic standpoint, so they have less incidence of, say, hip dysplasia, less incidence of knee injuries. They also sometimes have lower incidences of specific types of cancers. Now, it's very important for me to stress that those research studies have looked at very, very specific breeds of dogs. So, for example, those findings have borne out in dogs like Labradors and Golden Retrievers. When they looked at poodles, for example, it didn't make a difference one way or the other statistically whether those animals were spayed or neutered early or late. So, you know, that is not a true statement across the board. And realistically speaking, the decision of exactly when to spay or neuter is something that you know, it really does warrant a good deal of thought and a conversation with a veterinarian who's comfortable having that conversation rather than just saying that they should all be done at 6 months. And as it pertains to cats, one thing that I would say is that having an intact male or female cat when they're sort of getting amorous is not a good time for anybody. So when it comes to cats, as a rule, we usually spay or neuter them before they're 6 months old because, like I say, behaviorally speaking, it can get pretty dicey. Mm.
Thank you.
So yeah, Gary, now we spoke a little bit earlier about the CBD. And so there's a question that has come in. And first of all, I just want to thank those that have taken the time to send in questions. We get a lot of questions. Yeah. Oftentimes they're from people that either work during the day, especially teachers. We get, I think, more questions from teachers than anyone else, which is great because they're sharing it with their kids. But this one comes in and it says, I was wondering about CBD for pets who are suffering from arthritic conditions. My Rottweiler has hip dysplasia and is in great pain when he's moving. You know, I have been considering this option, but wasn't sure if it would be effective or who to ask. Our vet is reluctant to discuss, which goes right to what you were saying. So I was hoping you might provide some insight into your experience. And this is from Ben in Oregon.
In Oregon. Okay.
Yes.
I am not 100% sure of what the landscape is in Oregon as it pertains to veterinarians and cannabis. As I mentioned earlier, the Veterinary Medical Board in California has certainly effectively rattled its saber and scared the pants off of a lot of veterinarians as it pertains to, you know, talking about cannabis at all. But, you know, as it pertains to an arthritic dog and cannabis, you know, cannabis can be a very effective anti-inflammatory and pain-relieving supplement. CBD, which is really but one small facet of the larger, you know, sort of the larger picture of medical cannabis, CBD can be effective in helping with pain and soreness. And a lot of people have found benefit by using CBD products in their pets. You know, now I will tell you that there are a lot of different products out there. And, you know, some of them contain just CBD. Some of them contain other components, including THC. THC can be a very, very effective medication and a very, very effective pain reliever, but it has to be used. It has to be used with caution. You know, you absolutely can cause medical problems if you give a dog too much THC. So again, and I apologize about being vague about this, but you know, in this sort of forum, I can't really recommend like a brand product or a specific dose. And it sounds like this individual is having a bit of a tough time with their veterinarian. It might be worth them looking to see if there was another veterinarian in his area that might be a little bit more able to give him some guidance. In addition, in my book, there is an entire chapter devoted to medical cannabis that has dosing information in there. So that's a good resource as well.
That's great. And we had a guest on that spoke to this point a little bit. So if you want to go to, so for Ben, if you want to go to the Answers for the Family website, send us an email and we'll connect you with the person who talked about and has access to a product that works for animals as well as for humans.
All right, Gary, we got another listener question for you. Might be the last one. We need you to bring your best stuff right now. This is from June in Albuquerque. So, June, I hope you're listening to this right now. It says, my daughter's six-year-old lab hound cross was diagnosed with a heart tumor that was operated on at a local university last spring. Passed 2 weeks ago, he had always been fed organic food and lived on their horse ranch in Utah. Her best friend's six-year-old bulldog has cancer lesions on his back. Two of my friend's middle-aged dogs passed from cancer as well. They were not old dogs. What is this? Is it the food, water, chemicals sprayed everywhere? Or what is causing all this cancer in our beloved pets?
That's a very broad question. And you know, the answer to the question on some level is yes, in so much as it's a combination of everything. You know, I mean, while certainly just like with people, some animals are going to have a genetic predisposition towards certain types of cancers. That is just an unfortunate reality. But you know, there's no way it's not just a genetic. It's not solely a genetics issue. You know, there are a lot of things in our environment that are not good for us. There's chemicals in the atmosphere, and there's herbicides and pesticides that are sprayed. And to a certain extent, you know, we can do what we can to try and avoid these things and obviously not sort of take an active role at spraying Roundup in our yard or something like that. But on some level, we sort of have to live in the environment that we live in. But without a doubt, the one real big thing that you actually have control over here is their nutrition and their health care. If we get these guys, going back to the very beginning of this discussion, if we get these guys on a fresh whole food diet and we get them away from processed foods that actually have chemical compounds in them that promote cancer, if we get them on fresh foods that have nutritional compounds in them that prevent cancer, the hope would be is that we can limit the incidence of these things. And similarly, when it comes to their health care, as I was mentioning before, I mean, vaccines are very, very important. It's also very important not to over-vaccinate. It's also very important not to over-medicate. So, you know, we will, you know, we give these animals medication when they absolutely need it, but it doesn't mean that every time they sneeze, they need to go on antibiotics. It doesn't mean that every animal across the country should be on heartworm preventative and flea and tick preventative year round. It very much depends on where you live and whether or not that is appropriate based on where you live. It's really just a question, just like with us, of doing everything you can to achieve clean living. because that's honestly, that's really the most that you can do. You know, our environment is what it is. Our genetics are what they are. But there are some things that we can control and should control.
Well, the book is called The Ultimate Pet Health Guide, Secrets to Helping Pets Live Much Longer and Healthier Lives. Gary, thank you so much for coming on. Again, for those people out there, you can go to, you know, petvetexpert.com. You can go to our answersforthefamily.com site, and we will have all of Gary's information. Gary, I just want to acknowledge you and thank you for what you're doing out there. And, you know, for most of us, I think at one time I did some checking, and I think they said that 95 million people in the United States have pets.
Wow.
You know, so, you know, you're doing a great service for all of us. So thank you for that.
Well, thank you very much.
All right. Now, Jesse, hey, I am so glad that you were here. And I want to let everybody know, Jesse came here kind of on short notice, but it's because he's going to be the guest. We're going to have a lot more time to be able to talk a little bit more about what he's doing out there. Like Gabriella, he is traveling around. He's doing wonderful things. And there's nothing better, I think, than raising the self-esteem of our young people. So, you know, tell people a little bit more about those that can't wait till we haven't set a date yet. So if they can't wait till that date,
the mystery date.
Yes. So tell them how they can get in touch with you, how they can find out more about what your foundation is doing.
Yep. Really easy. The two best places to go are attitudeiseverythingfoundation.org or jesselebeau.com. Yep.
All right.
Find out and check out everything there.
All right. So for everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us next week on Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.